Indonesian troops began leaving East Timor today as the world awaits the arrival of a multinational peacekeeping force headed by Australia. In the meantime, the first airlift of food to starving East Timorese refugees began today as well. But we're going to talk about what's going on now in East Timor, what the international community is doing about it, and where we go from here, as we're joined by Imran Anwar, founder of the Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of the internet email in Pakistan, and, of course, a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. Hi, Imran.
George, hello.
First of all, the United Nations Security Council came up with something. I think it voted unanimously to sanction this peacekeeping force. It's not, if I understand it, a UN force, but it is a multinational one sanctioned by the United Nations and the UN and the Security Council unanimously. What exactly are we waiting for to happen now in East Timor?
Basically, George, it's a situation where we are waiting for the arrival of the peacekeepers who have started already showing up, as you know. And at the same time, we have had statements from the military, the Indonesian military general, saying that they expect it to be about a one-week process as they are beginning their pullout and letting the basically the international peacekeepers take over and maintain control, possibly even hoping that things will not come under control but get worse.
So now the withdrawal is of, so that the folks know where we're at here, the withdrawal that we are seeing that I'm talking about here would be Indonesian, official Indonesian military forces, some 9,000 of them roaming around in East Timor, and they're starting to withdraw. That is not to be confused with the militant factions that have been causing much of the trouble. Those are unofficial paramilitary groups or something to that effect.
Absolutely, because, George, then you would be saying basically that, yes, they are under our control, and hence any actions they took or any bloodshed that was committed by them was with our blessings, and
right.
Nobody's going to say that.
Whatever the reality, that's right. these other forces then still remain and will be something the U.N. might have to deal with. Well, not the U.N., but the multinational force led by Australia will have to deal with. First of all, let me ask you, what is their big problem? What's the first thing they're going to have to confront? There'll be some 7,500 troops there as part of this multinational force, 200 American troops that are supposedly just in basically advisory capacities. They're not military. They're not even, part of this military other than just in an advisory capacity. But some of them are actually going to be in a capacity, as I understand it, shoot first, ask questions later. This is not a UN thing where they can only defend themselves. This is a tougher force, as I understand it, from the official word from the UN representative to the U.S. UN representative. What does that mean, and what exactly is it they're trying to accomplish?
Well, George, it means potential disaster if things are not managed and handled very carefully. Think about the fact that there were 9,000 or so Indonesian troops deployed there. Perhaps they might not have put in their best efforts to prevent bloodshed. Perhaps they did. We do not know because we are not on the ground there.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you are a journalist on the ground in Timor, you do not know what is actually happening behind the scenes. So even with the 9,000 force, which does not care either way about shooting or whatever because it's an internal affair for them, they have significantly failed to establish law and order and bring things back to normal. Now, we are expecting a force of about 7,000, which is still not in place. It's going to be built up over an extended period of time with people from different countries, different even within countries from different military units, some not even considering this war, so it's a different mindset when you go into a situation like this. But you're basically flying in almost feeling like a peacekeeper, but almost being put into a battle zone. And with two sort of conditions that have been imposed upon you. One is that the public is expecting that you will restore order and that you really can do all these things. You shoot first and ask questions later, and that will fix everything. But even though you may not actually be planning to do something like that, the message that has already gone to the bad guys, supposedly, or whoever, you know, would be the villain in this case, is these guys are coming to fight. And hence, I will hunker down or start preparing even before their arrival. If I'm using machine guns right now, I'll try to get Stinger missiles or whatever missiles that can destroy moving convoys, for example. So the issue here is that this is it's that half-baked kind of thing, and that's what I have concerns about. It's not a peacekeeping mission, and it's not a full-fledged attack as we have carried out in the Gulf War, for example. This is half and half, except it's the wrong half of, in both cases, and that makes for a very risky and a very tricky situation, in my opinion.
Well, one would think that if you're going in, maybe the mistakes that we have been seeing in the past from UN forces has been that opposition forces, these paramilitary groups, whatever they are, have known that their hands were virtually tied. It appears that the difference maybe even that we've seen in Kosovo is that there's a much more realistic approach from the standpoint that they're there to keep the peace. That's fine, but it's much like police officers on the street. If you start shooting at them,
exactly,
they are going to shoot back in a rush.
Absolutely.
They're not going to have to go through channels to ask questions if we can we shoot back, which is what happens in we have at least heard reports that that's what happens to UN forces. So maybe the message is a little stronger, and maybe that'll be helpful instead of harmful. Who knows? It appears to be working in Kosovo, according to many. The other question is, what is the significance of or the importance of the fact that this is basically an Asian force led by Australia? It includes Thailand, the Philippines, and South Korea.
George, before I answer this question, I just wanted to comment on the last comment by you. That's a very good analysis. But again, to play the counter argument here, yes, the presence of peacekeepers / let's say even aggressive peacekeepers, mm-hmm, is working in Kosovo, and it might not be perfect, but it's a great step forward. But let's not forget that that came on the heels of a serious bombing campaign against a nation by basically NATO. And so certain results were achieved, and then the peacekeepers came in. In this case, we are still entering a place where there has not been any such decision made. It's actually been, in a positive note, it's a good thing that the positive thing is that the peacekeepers who have arrived have come at the end of a time frame when the Indonesian military has made a statement that they will withdraw.
And let's stop there a second. That's very important. Whereas Mr. Milosevic made every other kind of threat but withdrawing, Mr. Habibie has an 11th hour decision, but nonetheless a decision to cooperate with the international community, and they are going to withdraw their troops. They're starting to withdraw now. So that one would speculate, and I don't know how accurately, but one might speculate that we might not get much cooperation, but in theory, at least, we wouldn't get much resistance either from the Indonesian government and military.
That is true. But again, has there been a formal agreement on this? Has there been not just a firm handshake or whatever, but a legal document signed that this is not just a trap that is being set? You don't even have to set a trap. You don't even have to deliberately go about having a conspiracy to set a trap for United Nations peacekeepers, etc. But just the fact that you just walk out and tell the local population, well, we're leaving, somebody else is going to come control the situation, and they're going to shoot first and ask questions later, thereby escalating tensions on the part of the militias and raising expectations for the independence seekers. And hence, basically, it's a minefield even without your having, quote, deliberately set the trap.
What are they going to try to accomplish then, in your mind? What is what is it they're there to do, at least initially, and then where are they trying to go?
Well, I think my personal feeling is that for this to succeed, it's a good thing that if Mr. Habibie seems to be realizing or is actually sincere in his offer of independence to a region that I do not know how it will survive as an independent area. One hopes it will. without being a basket case or a dependent on other countries. But if he is sincere, then it will be in the interest of United Nations nations that are involved in this peacekeeping effort, and the United States and other Western nations, to actually make the Indonesian army and the Indonesian government an equal partner in restoring peace. That is what is working in Kosovo. It is not just an outside force taking care of everything. Much the same way that even in the Middle East, when we see that we have a Palestinian police authority, a Palestinian Authority police force, that has worked better than 50 years of Israeli military presence.
Well, isn't that what we, in theory, have here, the cooperation of the Indonesian government? Now, the world brought some pressure to bear, no question about it. They said, hey, get your, but we gave them some time. We said, get your act together, stop that violence down there, which you say is not of your doing anyway, so that, you know, there was, these are outlaw factions. World said, stop the violence. They said they would. They could not. They have, in essence, de facto admitted that they could not, and have begrudgingly, but nonetheless, decided to cooperate with international forces. So, it looks as though, on the surface at least, this is something that does include the Indonesian government and is does have the Indonesian government's, I hate to say blessings, but nonetheless has been authorized by them.
Yes, indeed. The statement of somebody authorizing it or saying, I'm okay with this, is different from your not exacting, but at least ensuring active participation. It may be begrudging active participation, but that would be in our interest to ask for, is my opinion.
And their neighbors are involved again. This Malaysia, for example, is one of their generals is going to be the deputy commander of this multinational force. And so in other words, they are, if they do not support it, having said they would, and they get involved somehow in escalating violence, or some of their troops are involved and some of these people from their neighboring countries are killed, relationships will be souring all over, as far as they're concerned. Their relationships will be souring all over Southeast Asia. They've already initiated themselves a breakdown in relationships with Australia.
That is true, indeed. And obviously, regional, this will be, I hope this will be a successful experiment, if that's what we may call it, because if we are able to bring peace and bring a restored law and order with this international but fairly regional peacekeeping force, then it will raise hopes for resolutions of other problems, such as the Kashmir issue, which is long outstanding on United Nations tables. And so my hopes are that this will work. But again, it has to be a sincere involvement of the government that is supposedly going to move out. And that's one of the things I just would like to always raise as a concern in the minds of our listeners and in the minds of policymakers who listen in, that it is important for you to take this at face value to ensure that things move forward. But in the back of your mind, make sure that you are working behind the scenes, using a carrot and stick approach if necessary, to make sure that the problem is solved permanently and properly, as opposed to leaving a mess behind, as we had, for example, in the Kashmir situation.
Now, the UN has been, and the Security Council members have been, very clear to reassure Indonesia that this peacekeeping presence in East Timor has nothing to do with the beginning of some larger creeping presence elsewhere in Indonesia. This is a very specific situation to help, in essence, Indonesia deal with its own policies, because it allowed for the referendum. They overwhelmingly voted to have independence. That was Habibie's, he's the one that initiated that. Maybe he wishes he hadn't. And so now the International Peacekeeping Force is there to help them deal with the problems that that has created, and I assume, am I correct, Imran, help them go forward with whatever the next steps are for some kind of autonomy or independence for East Timor.
Yes, indeed. in some of the actions, the Indonesian government is apparently showing its sincerity. For example, even in the press there, we will not find many rhetorical statements, etc. So it's being downplayed. And you and I have talked about the fact that when matters like this happen, take place, it is always the interest of the nation will always be focused more on its own immediate problems, not something that's 1,000 or 1,200 miles away. So if there's a major scandal going on, for example, if there is a major political coup in the making, or if there's a major election coming up, those things will always be of more interest to the Indonesian mainland, for example, the majority of the nation. And East Timor is something that is really can be made important by the government by making it a big issue, and the government hasn't done that. So that bodes well for the whole situation, that the Indonesian government is sincere in not fanning the flames, while my feeling is that they can be asked to do more to ensure that everything follows through smoothly, so that at the end of that we have, if it is going to be that, an independent nation which is capable of taking care of itself or have some sort of autonomy, yet have a direct link with the Indonesian economy and the military to defend it against other incidents, etc.
Now, what is complicating this issue? And it seems like, boy, these things get so difficult to follow. Just when we think we've got one spark maybe stomped out a bit, something else begins to flare. And that is, now there are questions of jurisdiction over West Timor and the half of the island that remains part of Indonesia. And I think this comment or statement from the Security Council was in answer to some comments made by the head of the Indonesian Army in East Timor, who said that they were going to be setting up some quarters there, and that if any of these peacekeepers, he warned that if the peacekeepers entered one area in the west of the territory, then there would be, you know, obviously there would be certain conflict. So now, what is the fear? Is that a legitimate fear the Indonesians have, or is this just something to kind of deflect and their embarrassment and their circumstances in East Timor?
George, this is a genuine fear and a genuine concern, and once you give in on something like East Timor, it is easy for the world / opinion, the world's peacekeeping presence, or the world's decision-making power over your policies and your people and your places in your country, basically, that are jeopardized. What I mean by that is that once you let them in, how do you stop them from going any further? Now, if you're talking about East Timor, that is fine. But over time, if the colloquial languages or all journalists and all media analysts start talking about the Timorese problem, suddenly somebody in the United Nations can stand up one day and say, oh, by the way, West Timor has also been a problem, and while we're there, let's fix that up too.
Well, I think the real concern is this. He has, it kind of resembles what's going on in Colombia, and I think this is where the conflict is really going to arise. I don't think the multinational community is really interested in invading West Timor anyhow. But what is the problem is that general who leads the Indonesian army who's the head of the Indonesian army in the area, has said that he's going to declare this area a region of West Timor, a canton. And then the militia, it's a militia canton. In other words, they have these militia. I'm taking that to mean that these militia forces can go in there, and it's like a haven for them. It's the Badlands. It's the demilitarized zone. You can't go after them in there. And so, they cross into that area, and I suspect this is probably rough country, you know, and difficult to deal with anyway. But they can come out, do their worst, and then go sneak back in there, and you have, as I said, kind of the same problem they're facing down in Colombia with that big free zone that the Colombian rebel factions have or terrorist factions have. I think that must be what the concern is, and what is your assessment?
I agree with that analysis, George, but that is also what I would sort of include in the earlier statement I made, that when you are solving this problem, do not leave a half-baked sort of temporary balance of power, because a temporary balance of power, or sweep this problem under the rug for now, that will not work, because, as you said, if you set up these little areas or zones, there will always be troublemakers, whether they're supported by the Indonesian government or by the locals or by someone from a third country. That will always be a risk. And that is why it is very important to be very much in agreement formally in black and white about what is going to be done, what is expected, and where it will stop and not go any further.
You know, though, of course, by the time you get, often the only way you get agreements such as these is to keep things a bit vague. And if you wait for something to be absolute and carved in stone, I mean, it would be 2 years from now. So, I mean, we're probably doing what we can under the circumstances. Let me ask you, though, we're almost out of time, but where is this, where do we go from here, and kind of, if things go well, relatively speaking, where do we go from here, and what's kind of what would be the progression if things do, if we do get the cooperation from Indonesian government, and if things don't come apart on us, well, what's the progression?
George, the optimal solution that I believe can and should take place, and in my opinion is the best way to move forward, is for the United Nations-led peacekeeping forces to arrive, work in conjunction with the Indonesian government, with Indonesia given some incentives to help it overcome its financial problems that it is having right now, but also then giving it the incentive to work alongside the peacekeepers to solve this problem, give autonomy to the region or independence if they want it, make sure that East and West are considered separate territories or countries if that's what ends up being the case, set up a very formal, very practical border, for example, if that is going to be the case, make sure that immediately there are strong economic ties that are established right away so that on the day of independence, you are not celebrating breaking away from the people you hate, but celebrating the beginning of a relationship as equals with people you're going to do business with and live with for next door to for the rest of your lives and history.
Well, let's hope that's the way it goes, Imran, but I'm sure we'll be, unfortunately, talking more about it. Thanks much for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure, George. Thank you.
Imran Anwar, founder of the ImranNet Services in New York. He is pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia.